from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, the Golden State Warriors won the fourth playoff game of the best-of-seven series yesterday in Oakland against the Los Angeles Clippers. But the game followed the exposure on Friday of racist comments attributed to Clipper owner Donald Sterling that were in an audio recorded and released by the gossip website TMZ.com. These alleged comments caused a furor, which continues and raises questions concerning what action ought to be taken. Joining us to discuss this is Harry Edwards, professor emeritus of sociology at UC Berkeley and a consultant to a number of NCAA teams and professional sports teams. And welcome back to Forum, Harry Edwards. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's begin with your reaction to all this. I mean, first of all, this is alleged, and we need to say alleged at this point because at this point it's not incontrovertible that it was his voice. But assuming that it was and assuming that it's proven, what action should be taken?
Well, you know, my perspective on it is that he hasn't denied that it was his voice. His wife said she couldn't deny that it was his voice. They're just waiting on due process to take its course. That's all well and good. But as far as I'm concerned, I think that it's time for Mr. Sterling to go. He has a substantial body of racist work going back years. As much as I admire and liked David Stern as a commissioner, I think that he dropped the ball in terms of dealing with this individual. And now I think that the new commissioner has to step up to the plate and take the harshest possible action to deal with it.
Well, let's hear just a bit of this audio just so people know what we're talking about.
Why should you be walking publicly with black people? Why? Is there a benefit to you?
Is it a benefit to me? Does it matter if they're white or blue or yellow?
I guess that you don't know that. Maybe you're stupid. Maybe you don't know what people think of you. It does matter, yeah.
That was Donald Sterling allegedly talking to, I don't know, it's been described as his girlfriend, his professional archivist. I mean, there are all kinds of characterizations of what her relationship is, either personally or professionally with him, and I'm not sure we know yet. But at this point, you may want to register your own thoughts about this. In fact, let me give you the phone number if you'd like to talk with us. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and you can join us and certainly direct any questions or comments to our guest, Harry Edwards. Again, it's toll free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. When you mentioned Harry Edwards, the whole history that Donald Sterling has, we're going back to a lawsuit by Elgin Baylor that was unsuccessful, but also being a landowner and talking about tenants in racist ways and getting into all kinds of litigation on that score as well.
Oh, absolutely. And this does not even count some of the it's a very small fraternity, the NBA, and so you hear things from players who once played for the Clippers. You hear things from ex-coaches from who were associated with the Clippers. So it's a very small fraternity, and this doesn't even count the kind of thing that goes on in the casual conversation, social conversation among people who are in the fraternity. But I think that he articulated his own fate to a certain degree. He doesn't want to be associated or identified with African Americans in a league that is 70-80% black. I think that the commissioner needs to grant him his wish and ban him from all further association and participation throughout the rest of the playoffs, and then take steps necessary to totally and completely divest him of his ownership of the team. It would not be the first time that an owner has been forced to sell a team owing to behavior, comments, et cetera, detrimental to the image and integrity of a game.
Speaking of detrimental, do you think, or what would you surmise or even hazard a guess, what was the effect on the players of this? I mean, they have to essentially produce a victory for someone who is racist, black players. I mean, it must have affected them psychologically,
oh,
I would imagine.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that the game that they played against Oakland last night was evidence that they're grieving over the loss of their owner, and that's a human response. But I think that now that they have gone through that phase, they have to get over it and get on with it. We have to understand that the Donald Sterling disposition and attitude was commonplace early on in the NBA. They had quotas of the number of African Americans. And that wasn't to keep from paying them, because they had to pay white players who held those positions even more. Whites made more on the average than black players of comparable competence and playing ability. They wanted to limit the identification of the team as being predominantly African American. This went on way into the 1970s when a Philadelphia 76ers team, which was contending for a championship, played before diminished audiences because it was essentially an all-black team. So this is something that has been ongoing. But those players played through it. They got over it. They got on with it and left a heck of a legacy. And I'm talking about Julius Erving and Bill Russell and Wayne Embry and Oscar Robertson and all these great players who played through that kind of racist nonsense. These players have to now understand that they have to play for each other. They have to play for Doc Rivers, a great coach. They have to play for the integrity of the game, the integrity of the playoffs. They have to play out of respect for the teams, their opponents, who have struggled to get to this point and deserve a serious competitive playoff series. So they have to get over it and get on with it and show that they're the progeny of these great players who played through an era when the Don Sterling attitude and disposition toward African Americans was the norm.
You mentioned Doc Rivers. Again, we're talking to Harry Edwards, professor emeritus of sociology and consultant to a number of NCAA teams and professional sports teams. Doc Rivers essentially didn't go along with the silent protest, which the players did yesterday. I mean, they put their jerseys on inside out and so forth. And I guess as the coach, maybe it was incumbent upon him to say, no, you shouldn't do this. But what do you make of that?
Well, I think that Doc Rivers has principled disposition that he's trying to stick to in terms of keeping the players focused on the task at hand. And anything, whether it's in support of, or protest against, or reaction to, detracts from that mission. I think that Doc Rivers has done a heck of a job in terms of trying to keep his players focused. And even though he, irrespective of his feelings about the specific act, it's clear, I think, in his mind that any act other than preparing for the game, preparing for the opposition, focusing on the film review and so forth, becomes a detriment to the central mission that brought them all together. I understand where he's coming from in that regard. He wishes that this whole thing would just go away, but unfortunately, that's not the real world. He's going to have to figure out some kind of way to get this team totally refocused, and the only way that I can think that can happen, is for them to realize that other great players went through this when the mountain was much higher to climb. This is one that they can get over and get on with the business of contending for a championship, which is what brought them all together. So I understand Doc's position on this. I've been around coaches. I know how they think. I know what their focus is. Anything that detracts from the mission at hand, I think, is something that they would tend to frown on.
And I don't know if you have any notion of why the NAACP selected Donald Sterling for a Citizen's Award for Citizen of the Year. I mean, that's kind of mystifying, isn't it?
Absolutely, because if they had vetted the situation and decided to do it, then there's a problem there. If they did not vet the situation and decided to do it, you have to wonder why. What was the impetus? What was the incentive to do it? I don't think that the NAACP is in the business of cleaning up racists. So I think that those are questions that they will have to answer. I understand that the Los Angeles NAACP is holding a press conference literally as we speak, trying to explain this situation away. I think it's going to be very difficult to do so. Either way, if they didn't know, they should have. If they knew and went ahead with it anyway, that's even worse.
Notwithstanding the odiousness of these comments, what do you say to the argument that, well, this is a free republic, freedom of expression? If somebody says something that's racist, they ought to have the right to say it and not necessarily be removed from a position of authority.
Well, he has a right to say it. That most certainly is freedom of speech in this country, and I would defend his right to be as ignorant as he wants to be. But you don't have a right to be an NBA owner. you don't have a right to slander the people who on whose patronage your entire operation is based. The fans are turned off and quit coming to the games, then the Clippers are out of business. If players, free agents and so forth refuse to play for this owner, then the Clippers are out of business. If they go into the draft and draft a player who says under no circumstances will I play for Donald Sterling, then the Clippers are out of business. He doesn't have a right to be an NBA owner. I defend his right to say anything he wants to say. That's America. But he doesn't have a right to be an NBA owner, and I think that that's something that the new commissioner and the rest of the owners have to take into consideration. But let me say something else, too, that this is we can't get too wrapped up in Donald Sterling. We have to look at this incident as something that we have to deal with in the second decade of the 21st century and try to put it behind us, along with that era when this was the norm in terms of dispositions toward African Americans. Donald Sterling is 80 years old. He has some serious medical issues. He obviously has no hesitancy about running his blood pressure up over conversations of his concerning his image relative to African Americans and so forth. And now he's under all of this pressure in terms of his relationship with African Americans, along with pressure from the league. I have to believe that an octogenarian under those kinds of circumstances, this is a problem that's eventually going to take care of itself. So we have to move beyond this and look at what does this mean in terms of this great institution, and what should our response be in terms of what we want to say as a society, as a league, as an area of occupational endeavor. What do we want to say about who we are and what we stand for in that regard?
Well, Kevin Johnson, former NBA player, now mayor of Sacramento, says this is a defining moment for the NBA and for Adam Silver, the new commissioner of the NBA. And I just wanted to get on record here before I go to your calls for Harry Edwards, our guest. In a statement that was released by Clippers president Annie Roser, the team questioned the authenticity of the tape, saying, and I'm quoting now, "We do not know if it is legitimate or has been altered," and then added, quote, "Mr. Sterling is emphatic that what is reflected on that recording is not consistent with, nor does it reflect his views, beliefs, or feelings. It is the antithesis of who he is, what he believes, and how he has lived his life. He feels terrible that such sentiments are being attributed to him and apologizes to anyone who might have been hurt by them," end of quote. So there's no denial in that, Harry Edwards.
Absolutely not. And that's a thing that struck me. It was also, I found it also very curious that his wife of a number of decades also said that she could not deny that it was him. So at the end of it all, the splitting of hairs, the technical stuff and so forth, you know, look, this is the second decade of the 21st century. We are all vulnerable to the impact of social media. Time and time again, people have been exposed, whether it's Riley Cooper of the Eagles getting caught on phone camera, whether it's Richie Incognito dealing with Jonathan Martin at the Dolphins operation, being caught through email, which is nothing but evidence mail these days. Eventually, this taping, videoing, photo cam capacity in the hand of private citizens is going to bring more and more of this kind of thing to the surface, so we may as well learn how to deal with it now.
Just wonder, before we get our calls on here, if there was a statement that you made around the Olympic boycott back in the 70s where there was a protest that you were involved in. You said, walk, crawl, run, or jump, it's all the same if you do it for the man.
That's true, but then you have to look at this. Donald Sterling is not the United States government. We're not talking about somebody who has put police dogs on black people who are trying to register to vote. We're not talking about mayors and police chiefs who've turned fire hoses on people trying to get their rights in terms of public accommodations and access to schools. We're not talking about someone who has set up killings and murders and so forth of black leaders. We're talking about a man who has made some absolutely atrocious statements from his position as the owner of an NBA team. These players play for their owner unless they determine this is not something that we want to even be associated with. We're playing for each other. We're playing for our fans. We're playing for the integrity of the game and the integrity of the playoffs. They can make that statement. I think that once this guy is banned from the playoffs, the Clippers can go ahead and deal with the real issue as far as they're concerned, which is what is going to be the legacy of this team in the face of this challenge. Will they fold? Will they cave? Will they throw in a towel? Or will they step up to the plate and show that they are the legitimate progeny of the Jim Browns and the Bill Russells and Oscar Robertsons and others who played through this mess years ago?
Well, there's a report that Magic Johnson may be interested or possibly even more than interested in buying the Clippers, which would be a kind of ironic and maybe in many ways splendid turn of fate, since he was the one she was being objected to by Donald Sterling for this woman being in a picture or photograph on Instagram with. I'm amazed that an 80-year-old guy even is familiar with Instagram. getting some emails here just let me read a few of these before I go to calls. Matt writes, is being racist in your personal life a crime? It may be repulsive, but is it something that can be punished in court or in your professional life? And so that question looms again in some of the listeners' minds. And another listener says, California has one of the strongest laws against recording private communications without consent of all parties in the nation, assuming the recording that had been posted on TMZ had been genuine, had the law been broken. So a lot of questions looming in this, in addition to just the opprobriousness and the despicable nature of the comments that were made. Another listener writes, Sterling's outdated and boorish throwback behavior is doubly ironic, given that sport, especially NBA, has been such a positive platform to bring races together, starting with the players working as a team and spreading to their fans, who are encouraged to reexamine any recalcitrant bigotry in a most affirming of manners. Let me go to your calls. And we go first to listener in Oakland, Kua. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Two comments. One, I feel like it's important for us not to dismiss Sterling's age or dismiss his comments due to his age, because he's 80 years old. There are a lot of young racist people out there, and it's actually, I hear what the sociologist from Berkeley is saying about, you know, this is not the American government. Nevertheless, this is indicative of what the American people will or will not stand for. The Clippers have a responsibility to boycott. And I heard the sociologist say, you know, they had to keep their mind on the game. It's about the game. But, okay, how much further are we going to justify it just being about the game? You know, this is about human bodies. These comments were dehumanizing. This is how it all begins. When you co-opt popular culture and you start using it as a platform to perpetuate racist ideas, it is dangerous. You know, Nazi Germany demonstrated this over and over again. Jim Crow demonstrated this over and over again. Another thing, as an Afro-Latina woman, I was very disappointed on the other end to hear this woman of African and Mexican descent negotiate her own humanity and the humanity of her bicultural people, you know, having to defend African Americans, having to defend Mexican people. It was just so disturbing that this beautiful young woman had to negotiate this. And it really is embarrassing to hear a professional woman do that. And I'm really disappointed that the Clippers didn't go through all the way with their initial desire was to boycott the game completely. And I was proud of Oakland Warrior fans for holding up great signs saying, you know, no room for racism. Magic is always welcome at the Oracle. And I have to say, I'm proud to be from Oakland. And I love L.A. And I'm really hoping that L.A. people will really show the NBA.
Cool. Let me jump in here, because you've made a couple of salient and I think relevant points. I'd like to hear what Harry Edwards has to say.
Well, first of all, I understand that the perspective that she has, but I think that more important than a statement against Donald Sterling at this point is a statement in favor of what brought all of these athletes together. Again, this is not a government action that Donald Sterling took. This is not people being trampled and beaten by a vested authority on the bridge at Selma. This is an individual who has been around for too long, and it's time for him to go. He is not bigger than the game. I think that this team has to look at what its legacy is going to be. They could boycott the game. They could give the series to the Golden State Warriors, which I think would be disrespectful of the Warriors. I think it would be disrespectful of the game. I think that it would be disrespectful of the entire process of sports competition for them to do that. Secondly, they have models going back to Bill Russell and Jim Brown and all these players who played through this years ago when the entire league manifested a Donald Sterling type of attitude and disposition. People forget that Magic Johnson and Larry Bird saved the NBA. People had begun to turn the NBA off until that great competition in the early 1980s came to the fore. And it's ironic that Magic Johnson would again be caught up into this situation, which was not of his making, because, again, there's a chance for him to be involved in a process that moves the game ahead. But the way that you do that is not to deny the league, the game, the fans, all of the people who have a vested interest in this process operating as it should, as a professional league should, simply to get at Donald Sterling. That's the commissioner's problem to deal with Donald Sterling. They can simply make their statement and go out and be the best basketball team that they can be.
And I want to thank Kua for her call and go right on to another caller. And that's you, Frank. Morning.
Good morning. I wanted to follow up on this idea of the mechanism to get at him. I share the caller and the professor's anger, but I'm interested in the fact how mechanically, legally, are you proposing to take away this billionaire's toy? Boycotts seem to hurt the players, right? If they stop playing, they don't get paid. Is there a morals clause or some sort of provision in the ownership contract such that he can be divested?
Well, Frank, you're raising a central question. I'm actually looking at a tweet here from someone named Reverend Dude who says, I agree, forced to sell is the only way to, quote, right this circle. Little history here. Harry Edwards, Marge Schott, Cincinnati Reds owner, had a similar imbroglio, as I recall. I mean, can you actually compel the other owners get together in a statutory way and compel an owner to sell his team?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at Eddie DiBarlo, who was a great owner, and what happened in the wake of his issues with the San Francisco 49ers. Look at Marge Schott, who ultimately had to let the team go. So at the end of the day, these owners can do what is necessary in order to preserve the integrity and viability of the game. We have an owner down here now with the Clippers who no free agent in all likelihood is going to want to come and play for. We have an owner where even draftees may say, I don't want to play for that guy. We have an owner where even the players who are under contract may not want to re-sign with this guy at any price. At some point, that becomes a detriment to the league and to the game. So there are auspices under which this situation can be resolved, and I think that the owners, if they're committed to resolving it, will be able to do so.
And we go to another caller from Dallas, Texas. Richard joins us. Richard, welcome to Forum. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for the call. I mean, thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. You're on. I thought you were on, but somehow that connection didn't stay. We'll go to Pinal. Tony, you're on. Hi.
Yeah, you know, not that I condone anything that was said by Mr. Sterling. However, the issue that I have not heard discussed, you know, these comments were made in the context, I believe, with an argument with a girlfriend, I believe. The issue of whether or not Mr. Sterling was he known that he was being recorded? Because if he wasn't, that's quite illegal. And if Mr. the gentleman could comment on that aspect.
Yeah, I think this is an important point or side issue here, Harry Edwards. It's true that you cannot record without consent in California, a private conversation.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that there are legal issues involved with the recording. But what is not at issue is the tenor and content of the comments that were made. The fact that they were recording, that's a legal issue between, some district attorney or some the attorney general or whoever and the individual that did the recording. We're not talking about something that is going to be used as evidence in a trial. We're talking about the court of public opinion. And once that comes out, especially in this age of social media, where people are being exposed left and right at times that they were off guard, that doesn't matter. The legalities, that's wonderful. Go ahead and take care of that. If she has to go to prison as a result of that, that's fine. But that doesn't erase one centimeter of the conversation that was alleged to Mr. Sterling. That is what we have to deal with. Is this the owner that we want, whether the information came out legally or illegally?
And we'll go to another caller, and that's Jay. Jay, join us.
Hi. Yeah, so on a related issue, we need to start looking into how many commissioners of NBA have been of, say, different ethnic or colors color in terms of the background, non-white. And secondly, how many owners of teams are non-white as well. So we need to start looking into seeing, is this a white boys club, or is it primarily the problem with Donald Sterling, or is it a problem across the NBA institution and maybe other professional organizations? And we need to really, you know, start the people can start voting by turning off the TVs and not watching the games if they think there's need for a change.
Well, the caller has a point, Harry Edwards. It's not exactly a diverse, racially diverse ownership.
Yeah, look, that's a problem that we've been concerned about since the 1960s. One of the problems that I raised when I was organizing the Olympic Project for Human Rights in terms of the college ranks is, why should we play where we can't work? In terms of the professional ranks, if they are not do not respect us enough to appoint us as head coaches and general managers, how are we ever going to be voted in as head of state? I could never have imagined a black family in the White House. But those are questions that were raised in the 1960s. A lot of that struggle still goes on. That struggle for access continues to this day. There are some blacks in the ownership ranks of the NBA, most certainly Michael Jordan, most certainly Magic Johnson, most certainly Bob Johnson, and so forth at the Charlotte team. But that struggle goes on. We should not inflate this particular issue beyond the egregious comments of Donald Sterling.
Hold that thought for a minute, Harry Edwards, because I've got a caller here who's putting things into perspective I haven't heard from yet. We've got seconds left. Be quick, Brian. What are you saying? Donald Sterling's remarks were taken out of context?
I believe they were, because I believe he was describing a situation where he said that friends of his were making fun of him for some of the stuff that she had put up, and so he was trying to tell her that he was being put into a compromising position.
Okay, we got seconds left. Harry Edwards on that score.
Well, I understand that. I understand the personal dimensions of this thing. Who knows what goes on behind closed doors? There's no question that this was a personal conversation between two people. But what we cannot get past is the fact that these statements were egregious, racist, and that the league now has the problem of dealing with it.
We'll let it stand there. Harry Edwards, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We are coming up on another hour. In the hour ahead, we're going to talk about the president's trip to the Philippines. Agreement was reached, and more to talk about with military bases and trade in the Philippines. And we'll have some Filipino Americans here in the Bay Area with us in the hour ahead. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.